finally, it's good to have you on the show.
Yes,
man,
yes.
Woman. Cheers, cheers. Cheers to you.
Changed my life.
And cheers to writing too, is it?
No lah, I met you ma.
Change your life, man. Cheers. Yay. These are all sponsored by Eugene Tay. How do I start with the...
Hi, welcome to another episode of Dying to
Be. It's been a while.
Here with me is Shermaine. Shermaine,
I'm dying to be. See, this is where you start the intro. Da, da, na,
na. Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a certainty.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.
And welcome to another episode of Dying to Meet You. And today I have a very important guest, because the whole concept of Dying to Meet You and the whole book came about, and you know, the friendship and all that came about because of this very, very amazing woman who became a dear friend to me. Her name is Wong Shermaine. Yes. Hi, Shermaine.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Yes. This is a lovely place to be in, because the minute she came in, over there was the table. Okay, well, the table is no longer there, but that was the table where we actually spent
1 year. Yeah, every Monday, I would come here and we would do interviews for 2 hours, 3 hours. And she would share with me all her wonderful stories about, you know, handling the farewells for many, many people.
Mm, so yeah,
that was a very important book.
Yes,
for me too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, in fact, many of you who has my book Dying to Meet You, you will know that her name is mentioned, Anjali May with Wong Shermaine.
And thank you so much, because so many people don't put down the name.
Really? No,
yeah,
I love
so
it.
So I'm really, really so thankful that you put down my byline.
Oh, yes, you know, I feel that this book will never, because this book has often been sort of mentioned as a one-day read. And I think it's really because of Shermaine's, you know, writing.
I'm not sure if that's a good thing.
One-day read, it means that
it's
really
fast. Very, very thin, is it?
No. They say that it's so, you know, engaging and captivating that they keep going on. And which is why I thought, wow, that was a beautiful thing to, you know, and I think kudos to you for writing it. So Shermaine's role back then, I remember I was telling you a lot of stories, but the best part about her was how she, I don't know how you magically put, you know, different chapters, like, oh, this story, because everything in my head was like, okay, I just download for you. And then I remember how you have to like, okay, I think this story should belong here, this story should belong here. Yep. And then she came out with the chapter's name. I was like, yeah, perfect. And I think even the word Dying to Meet You, you know, it was just something that we had a brainstorm, like, what do you think
no,
should be
because
a
you were talking about how you introduce yourself to other people.
Exactly,
and I thought that it's a very fitting title, because you're also introducing yourself to the world through the book. So I just thought it would be perfect.
Yes, so that's why it's so amazing to have Shermaine here with me. So maybe just share a little bit, you know, what was, what do you do, and before, perhaps before writing this book,
Okay, so basically I've always been a writer. Since I was young, I have been asked to stand up in class to read my essays to my classmates. So that actually told me that it was something which I was good in and which I found easier than other people. I studied journalism at university, and then I went to join the Straits Times as a journalist. And after that, I quit my job to become a full-time mom to my first child, who was born in 2004. Okay. And I have been just freelancing ever since for the last 18 years, from 2004 until this year. And I'm actually going to end that. I'm going to end that career in July, because I'm going to take on a full-time job.
We will come to that later. So, I mean, writing this book, I think one thing that really struck me was, you know, the how you took up challenges. So I remember we were talking about embalming, the story about embalming. We're sitting at the table, we were like going through like about embalming. I was trying to explain to Shermaine. She was like, hey, I think the best way is just let me see it. You know, you tell me all this, I cannot understand. And she's that brave to, you know, stand inside an embalming room and actually observe the whole, yeah, the whole duration. You didn't faint, right? You didn't puke?
No, of course not. I mean, and actually one of the reasons that I wanted to do your book, and I really wanted to do it, was because I had already felt that death is something which everyone will have to go through, whether you yourself or whether it is your parents or relatives or loved ones. And it was something which I was very, very curious about, because I just felt that there's so much to learn about the process of death and what happens at funerals. So I really snatched the opportunity to do the book for you, and I'm so glad we got along.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that you actually gave me the chance to get real with a lot of the things, like, you know, watching the embalming. And I don't know, I mean, you even asked me, I don't know if you remember, you asked me whether I wanted to put on the gloves and get involved.
Was it?
Yes, you did. And that's right. And I mean, no, but actually I didn't because I had to write.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to
write.
That's right. Right? So I told you, oh my gosh, I wish I could, but I have to write. So
yeah.
I have to pay attention and I can only observe. But you know, I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
The real look. Mm. Yeah.
So Charmaine, I mean, writing my book, has that given you different perspective, you know, or did it change your perspective after writing my book and before writing my book?
There were a lot of lessons that I drew from your book. Really, and I think the primary one, the most important thing really, is that we should live our life as if it's our last day.
Mm.
You know, because the death is can come anytime and is really, really unexpected. Mm. And I think through all the stories that you shared and everything, is the main thing was really about how we should treasure our life,
mm.
Every minute, every moment of it, and just get the most that we can out of it in creating meaningful relationships, in creating memorable experiences. And I think that was the main thing. And I remember you were very impacted by the chapter on suicides, you know, that really tied in with, like I was saying, you know, how we should live every day like it's our last. And life is really, really valuable. And it's not just about us, but it's about the people around us and what we mean to the people around us.
Maybe you can share a little bit more about your highest point in your life.
If I could liken my life to a journey, right? Like a journey, like a car journey, mm. from, say, Changi Airport to Tuas. You know, you start off at Changi Airport and you're supposed to get to Tuas at the end of your life. I would say that the first half of my life was beautiful. You know, it was a smooth drive along the ECP. The scenery was beautiful. There was no traffic. You know, the windows are down and everything was just wonderful. You know, everything looked great. And what this means is that, you know, my life was really, really happy and really perfect. I had a very privileged childhood, I must say. I grew up with everything that I could possibly want. And I married the man of my dreams. He was actually, I would say, he was my first love. And then
your childhood, right?
I had a perfect childhood. And then I had what I felt was a perfect marriage.
Mm.
Yeah, so I really, really loved my husband. And then I had three very healthy, beautiful kids, you know. And at that time, I would say my highest point really was when I was really thoroughly enjoying my motherhood journey and my marriage. You know, I felt like I had the perfect marriage. I felt like I had the perfect family. And I was having a very nice side hustle from doing what I loved and earning money from it. You know, so I was freelance writing. I was also freelancing by playing the violin and piano,
oh, yeah.
which I can do. So, you know, everything was great. And I think this high point of my life was encapsulated in a blog, a family blog, which I wrote.
Oh, wow.
Dedicated to my family. So I actually wrote that blog over 16 years. 16 years from 2004 to 20... Was it 16 years? 2004 to 2018, I would say. So it's 14 years.
Mm.
14 years. And there were 2,700 entries. So these high points are all in that blog where every entry was a tribute to the beauty of family life and how I was so happy to be doing what I was doing at that point in time. So I would say that really was my highest point.
Mm.
That period for 14 years, 10, 12, 14 years. So
yeah.
2004 I had number one, and then 2006 I had number two, and then 2008 I had number three. And we went to Australia for 1 year because my husband was studying there. And that was also another perfect time where, you know, we had no money, but we had all the time in the world to enjoy each other's company and have new experiences on a beach in Australia. So it was perfect. It was a beautiful life.
So parenthood, I mean, now you talk about being a mother, I think I realized, I think for me, my high point was also being, you know, being a mom. La. What kind of parent or mother do you classify, do you think you are?
I think I would classify myself as free range, as you have just described. I do write a parenting column for the Straits Times, and I brand myself as a very chill mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the editor has told me before, hey, please continue writing because we don't have many chill moms. And we want more people to be as chill as you are. So I really kind of let my kids experience life and, you know, the different things. Yeah, I'm not afraid to let them take public transport or to buy their own food or to cross the road, you know, things like that.
But I think being free range also comes with a lot of, like, I think I resonate with that because I always also felt that being a free range parent, you sort of let go, but actually you are actually, it takes a lot of courage to be a free range because at one point you are like, okay, what if this happens? So you'll be worried, but you can't show you're being worried, you know? You need to tell your kids, like, yeah, mommy got your back. But actually behind, you're like, oh my God.
It's like the duck that's paddling frantically underwater. Exactly. It's just cruising, but it's like actually doing this.
Yes. And then you're just looking like, okay, that's good, keep going.
And then
you're like,
and then you're just praying.
God, don't fall down.
That's
what, you know, when people say free range, it's not actually that free. It's just that we don't want to pressure or, like, you know, I think vocalize the experience for the kids. Yeah. I think, like, kids can free flow and then they can explore and all that. So you're sharing about, you know, your, interestingly, when you talk about 2004 to 2018. Yeah. So then what would you classify as your lowest point in your life? Yeah.
So,
because you talk about ECP, right? So we're still at ECP. Yeah.
And we're somewhere at the Benjamin Sheares Bridge, where it's beautiful, right?
Wow.
Halfway already. Halfway?
Halfway. You see the fire and all that.
Yeah. Okay. So I think if I were to continue this metaphor of the ECP journey, what happened was that I had two car crashes. And the first was in 2017. And what happened was that my marriage broke down, so I struggled with that hugely. I think I would classify that period of time as the hardest period that I've had to go through in my life. So that was car crash number one. And then I separated from my husband as a result of the difficulties that we were going through. And so we were living and moving on with our lives as co-parents of the three children. And then what happened, the second car crash, what happened was that in 2021, which was just last year, in October, my husband, whom I had not divorced yet, he actually died suddenly in an accident. So that was car crash number two. And now I'm kind of like still picking up the pieces and trying to get moving again. Yeah. Yes. And I'm very grateful that that you did the funeral for him. Yeah, because so I think I'm so grateful that doing this book I actually met her, because when he died, it was extremely sudden. And I called her and she was in France.
Yes. I remember, I was like, is the main calling me and not texting me? I need to pick it up. And I still remember, interestingly, I'm actually on the highway going to center of France. We stopped to have lunch.
Okay.
I remember this vividly. I was like, Charmaine calling me, that's weird. Because you will never call me.
I will never call. I usually find that quite an imposition. I don't call people, I'm just WhatsApp, right?
Wow, so the minute I answered, I still remember you were like, are you not in Singapore? And then the next thing you said, why are you not in Singapore? Why are you not in Singapore? Oh, and that was when I was like, okay, something happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So she had actually known about the problems that I was having with my marriage. And so when I told her over the phone, and it was at night, I think it was the same night that the policeman knocked on our door, because they only had his identity card. And all they had was his address, because they couldn't get into his phone to call anyone. They knocked on the door, and let me tell this story because it's quite dramatic, but they knocked on the door, I wasn't at home. My son was out celebrating with his friends after his O-level paper, and the only two people at home were my daughters, and so they were really scared because there were two policemen knocking on the door. So whatever it is, they opened the door eventually, and the police told me, I rushed back home from my dinner, and they told me that he had died. And then first thing I thought of was calling her, because, you know, having done this book, you know, I kind of know that I need a funeral director.
Yes, of course.
So first thing I thought was, I need her more than anybody, more than a friend, more than a neighbor, more than a mom, more than a dad. I was so grateful that I had a funeral director on my
call list.
On my call list. Yeah.
Is it on your speed dial?
No. No, no.
I'm just kidding. But
you just need a WhatsApp, right?
Yeah, so it's true. Yeah, I'm glad you WhatsApp me.
I was so grateful. Yeah, I called her and I'm so grateful that she even though she remotely managed the event, her staff was so competent and they just helped me organize the whole funeral so beautifully from the 3 day, you know, the 3 day wake all the way to the end.
Yeah. I remember telling my staff like, okay, do this for you, do this for you. Don't need to ask her because I think I figure out like, okay,
you know me.
Yeah. I was like, don't ask her, she's too distraught, you know. Then Michelle was there with you. Yeah. I remember I was like, please support you, you know. Yeah. I think it was, I came back, I think a few weeks after, and then I met you, but I thought it was something that was quite comforting. Of course, you know, to lose a partner, whether or not, I mean, it's still a partner, was a soulmate you've been with for so many years. And, you know, and I remember how your kids become sort of your protector after the post-funeral, and are they still your protector, right? They still continue to make sure mommy is home.
They don't like it when I go out late. Oh, yes. My daughter will say, if you're going to drink, don't drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to be chilling here until, you know.
She's very careful. I mean, I think if she could have her way, she would lock me up in the house and throw away the key. She knows. I mean, she's the one who thinks a little far ahead and she's worried that... Mm. You know, she has lost one. What if she loses both? Yeah, and she has told me that I don't want to be an orphan.
True. So it's hard. I always find losing when I lose my dad, it's not easy too, right? I mean, I was older. Yeah, but I can only imagine what my brother and my sister was going through.
Yeah.
Were going through.
Yeah.
And not having a father figure. So, yeah. And I also remember back then, yeah, there was a period in 2017, right? I was quite made known about it because you went silent on me.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you. So there was, I think you were doing some extra interviews for this book. Mm. And then after that, you started telling me about the woman who committed suicide when she had marital troubles. And her marital troubles kind of echoed mine. And then I found it very hard to continue with the interview because it was
I didn't even know at that point.
She killed herself.
I know, right?
It was hard. I mean, that chapter.
But
I
didn't know. You didn't know. I didn't know.
This woman, you look at her, she's like, you know, like jovial, she's laughing. But I tell you, deep within this, you know how we cope with stress, right? I know it's not easy. You know how Buddhism is like the law of impermanence, right? We all know we'll leave one day, but how do we stay equanimous with losing someone?
Mm.
It's hard. Grief is hard, right? The minute we love someone, we will go through grief. So I'm always wondering, like, if there's an exercise for us to come to terms, you know, or to visualize, or who knows, maybe AI next time can have us communicating with our loved ones, right?
Yeah. So you know, obviously, when we separated, I felt that it was the right decision so that I could be, so that I didn't have to lie to myself or to my friends or to anyone else. We were a happily married couple. But when he died, it was an intense period of soul searching because I never thought that he would die, right? I never thought that he would die. And so I thought, as you were saying, the AI, I thought, what if we had not separated? What if I had accepted whatever it was and I was willing to live with whatever it was and he had continued with the family, would we be in a better place? Would we be still a family unit? Perhaps not in love, not a father and mother who are in love, you know, platonic, but apparently that's what happens to a lot of couples. Would that, might that have been a better choice for the children? You know, because obviously if he had been with us, maybe he wouldn't have died and it would be a very different alternate reality or future than what I'm facing now, which is as a widow, right?
Yeah. So I met a widower who I also three kids. He was the one who planned his wife's funeral with me. So this was supposed to be the third edition, if we ever make it to third edition. And after, and I said this in another episode, that after I met him, I was very, very affected. And I met him because, you know, he was pre-planning for his wife, and his wife is very young. And I met him, and we spoke for 3 hours, just this year. And he finally said, it was like almost 1.5 years after his wife has passed. And then he shared with me that, you know, everyone look at me like as if I'm okay. Right? Because like exactly like you don't show it. But a lot of times we are suffering, but we just don't want people to be worried for us. And he, instead of him being consoled, he has to console another guy who's also a widower for many years compared to him. And he is trying to nudge this guy to ask a girl out. Then he asked me like, you know, Angelie, I also wonder when I can start moving on, because her house and her things are still in the house. They haven't removed it, and probably the same for you. He doesn't want to touch anything. Yeah, is it guilty, right? But it's okay, you know, we all take time and we need time. So he mentioned to me that he decided sometime this year he's gonna clean up, he's gonna get things done. He actually met me because he wanted to do pre-planning, he wanted to do his will, he wanted to get his matter and affairs settled, because his youngest, I think, is 11. So he just like, oh, I wanted to do this because, you know, I don't want this to leave to chances again. And then he said he wanted to move out from the matrimonial house. And it's a big move. He's like, ah, I don't know how to tell my kids. So we sat there talking for 3 hours, almost four. And we're just like constant, you know, like sharing about, and I know he needed someone to talk to. So I was there. Thank God I catered that much time before my next appointment. And I was grateful that I was able to hear his side of his story. And he actually told me, like, you know, Angelie, it's not easy for a widower to go back to dating life. I said, really? Why? And he said, because my wife was my first girlfriend. I don't know how to date. And he actually told me that. But I didn't want to say like, well, just talk to a girl like you and me, like you're just talking to me, just be friends. But I didn't say that, of course. I feel like that probably crossed the professional line, right? But because of what he did for his wife, and I might have mentioned to you, I came back asking Emmanuel, I said, baby, do you think it's better you go first or I go first? Wow, he was quite... You know, he's quite upset about it. Not upset because I asked such a question, right? Yes. So he, so like he tried to be a macho, you know, tough man, but actually, he's more emotional than me. Then the next day, he said, "Maybe I think it's better I go first." Yeah, and I said, "Yeah, I think so too. I think because he probably can't manage my daughter's, you know, vomit and like the poo poo and all that. I mean, he doesn't even change the diaper. You think he can manage all this?" And I even asked him, I said, "Can you manage if I'm not here?" He said, "I have to manage, right? It's not a choice." He said that. I said, "Yeah, but you don't even know like where the diaper, front or back. I have to remind him like the front and the one with the tape is the back. You know, all this kind of like swimsuit also. Like, baby, can you wear the swimsuit?" Then my daughter come out with the wrong cross. The cross is the front. I said, "Okay," you know, but that's my man for you. Yeah, but it was so important to have that conversation with him. I felt that so actually that because of that episode, well, I start to put more things in place. Yeah, in case touch wood something. Where's the wood? Touch wood. If I go first, you know, like
so based on what you said, I think something which struck me is you were sharing the story of the guy who said that people don't talk about it. Yeah, so it's true that people don't talk about it, and actually I welcome people asking me about it.
Oh,
it's
good.
It's very strange. I don't know whether it's the same for everyone. Maybe some people don't talk about it. I think people are just really afraid to even broach the subject because they don't know whether I might break down into a puddle and just dissolve in tears, right? But recently there was one guy who just put me aside and just asked me, "How are you?" And I tell you, it was so... I just told him, I said, "Thank you so much for asking me how I'm doing," because nobody has dared to talk about it, and everybody just kind of pretends that it didn't happen.
Oh, wow.
No, because I understand, because I totally understand, because I think if I hadn't been through it, I also would not dare to talk about the death of a spouse with a friend, because I'd be like, "Oh my God, what if I cannot handle the, you know, I mean, what if I'm opening up the wound and then she cannot take it, you know, kind of thing." But actually for me, I think I really welcome any person who asks me, "How are you doing? How is it?" and all that. And so I actually felt like it mattered, because before that, everybody just
scared around. dance
out
around
of fear, it, yeah. And then they don't talk about it. But I welcome the opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
And then the second thing you talked about was dating, right? Mm. You forever ask me whether I'm going to date.
Yes.
Forever. She has been asking me forever. That like even before my husband died, she's been asking me forever. So are you going to date?
Yes. Like, of course. I mean, you're still young.
No.
Not yet.
No,
maybe.
No, I mean, okay, so I told you, I said just now he was my first love. Mm. I don't think I ever told you this, yeah. But I've been dating him since I was 20.
Exactly right.
Yes, I only had, should I even say this? But I only had one boyfriend before him. Mm. And he was everything that I wanted, you know, really everything. And so, after what has happened in my own marriage as well, I think I'm going to have a lot of trust issues. Mm. There's a lot of trust issues. No one. I think I'm ready to embrace the single life.
No, it's
you
okay,
know, like what you were doing before you had your daughter.
Yes,
the, yeah, you're traveling, and I'm not having to, you know, be accountable to anyone for how I do my things, how I place my pillow, how I can do anything I want. So I think no.
Maybe as a companion, I think it was so interesting. No, you know why? That, you know, now that you talk about it, I was thinking like, how come we don't have an app for like. Widow and widowers.
No,
if you had a dating app just for them, which is what I was talking to the widower, right? He said, oh, is it difficult for you to find someone? He said, yeah, you know, he's not active on those apps, but sometimes it's hard. Like, example, like talking about losing a partner, what's it like? And probably some people don't want to, you know, talk about this topic. And just like my, you know, my father-in-law, after he lost.
Yeah, his wife.
So, you know, my father-in-law, being French, he has a dating app. He is dating 4 girls at the same time.
Wow.
And I was like looking at him, my brother-in-law.
Wow,
I was like,
that's
wow,
so progressive.
Your dad is, you know, your dad is better than you. How many days do you have? I know we were just making a joke out of it. But yeah, because he... And then because I talk to my father-in-law a lot, and I think because being a woman, we can sort of connect, because he has only 2 boys, right? And these 2 boys don't talk about all this. And I think a part of him was he's afraid to be alone. Because, you know, the boys are not living in France, and I think he's very scared to be alone. He was with my mother-in-law for many, many years. And my mother-in-law also told him, like, don't stop. You know, don't stop it. You can go and date after I pass. So, I mean, don't be like, oh yes, I need to find someone. But you know, when it comes, be open to the concept. I think
that's what you've been telling me from day one.
Yeah, 2017.
She's been telling me the same thing.
Yeah.
Be open.
Yeah, your kids, you know.
Well, I don't feel lonely now. Maybe because
your kids,
the children.
Yeah, it's true.
And but then you know, I think I'd rather have a pet than a man.
that obeys you, is it? You get a rabbit. Oh no, rabbit is not good. They chew off all your cables. I know that. Yeah,
they are
a goldfish. You don't never talk back.
They are loving. They are faithful. They are easy. They are. You know.
Not all men are like that. You know.
Okay.
So I mean, you know, it's always been lovely to speak with Shirley, because I know she's someone who always want to be very tough, and you don't look at her, you know, so tiny petite, but she's one tough chick.
I'm quite tough.
Cheers, man.
Quite resilient.
I know you are. Mm. So after now that you've gone through 2 car crashes, you're now trying to pave your new path. So has that changed your perspective? You know, I always share that we all have different journeys. Our destination is the same. And before things happen to your hubby, and then and after, like, do you see a shift in your perspective about, you know, death or even funeral? Like, do you have a different mindset of how you want things to be?
I think it's not so much about death or funerals, but it's probably more about life. And I think what I've taken away from my experiences, which were all the negative ones, which were all compressed in the last 5 years, would be that there really is nothing very much to fear. I think a lot of people live life with a lot of fear. I scared I lose my job. I scared I no money. I scared my marriage break down. I scared this, I scared that, you know. But actually, after going through 2, I think, really bad episodes in my life, I feel that we do recover. You know, there's really nothing much to fear. That as bad as life gets, it will come back.
Yeah.
It will be okay, and that you will be able to resume or come back to some sort of normal, which you can be happy with. I feel.
Yeah, even your boy had to take his exam on my son day was, of the funeral.
Yes, yes. So my son, I was saying that when the news came that his father died, he was actually in Jewel at Jinja Chicken. He was celebrating with his friend. He had just finished his EMAT or history paper. So he came back home to be greeted with this news. And I don't want to describe how he reacted, but it was really, really bad. But he has since actually come to a much better place. And now he's in JC1. He is studying very hard. In fact, just before this interview, I fetched him to school and he was actually quite stressed about his exam, but he studied very hard for it. So I think he's doing fine. As of now, I must put a disclaimer because, you know, I have to be monitoring the children. After he died as well, I would often talk to the children about how I'm feeling, and when I had to cry, I would cry freely in front of them, and they would like, "Mama's crying again." And I'm like, "You can cry too, you know? It's okay. Cry, cry. Come, it's good, it's good." Yes, yes, you know, I just for them to, you know, then "Do you miss Papa?" and all that kind of stuff. And so then I will confide, you know, like the difficulties that I'm facing. I will tell them that I'm very worried about money, or, you know, "I have to do this. Oh my God, it takes forever to get the letter of probate or whatever." So they all knew what was happening. And I think when you present yourself as vulnerable to them, they are more willing to review the vulnerabilities.
I think you empower them to share.
They feel that it's okay.
Yeah, it's
you
okay.
Know?
Yeah, I definitely think. Yeah, this slogan,
Mama is not
okay.
That strong, you know.
She's human.
Yeah, you shouldn't think that I'm that strong. Also, so they will also they see that, and yeah. So if they have issues, they are also more willing to open up.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So you see, it's okay not to be okay. I feel that's the best. It's okay not to be okay. Yeah. So what about farewell? Because I actually never even asked you. Have you thought
farewell?
About? Yeah.
My own?
Yeah. You probably know mine, but you know, you wrote my book, but we never talk about.
Okay.
Hey, what's your farewell gonna be?
So I'm Christian now.
Yes. It's good. Congrats.
Yeah. So I have.
I know it's been a journey.
Yeah, so I think all these experiences have also led me on a spiritual journey, and I have actually embraced Christ. Yeah, so it will be a Christian funeral.
Okay, I think music definitely performance by your orchestra. I think that would be nice.
I don't know. I don't know if my friends will want to perform at my.
I used to tell my friends, "Hey, come to my funeral and dance." Like, yeah, in my wheelchair. I said, "Yeah, sure, man. I don't care, man. Walking stick, wheelchair. Make sure you just dance for me."
Yeah. No, I haven't thought about anything actually. Huh.
What about final resting place? Where is your husband resting?
At home. Didn't you advise me?
Exactly.
You told me it was okay to put his ashes at home. I asked her because it didn't seem the normal thing to do, because everybody gets a niche or a proper thing. And then I asked her and she said, "Actually, if you're not pantang, it's okay." You know? And then I was like, "Hey, it's free, right?"
You don't charge for that space.
Yeah, yeah. And he's home and you know, the kids can see him and talk to him. Ooh. So he's home.
Absolutely. I love this idea because, you know, when I started the plant, the idea of the bio-urn plant, and I thought that was beautiful where the loved ones can actually sit next to the plant and talk to them. And I always encourage, like, there's no, as long as you're not pantang, you know, in the past people were like, "Oh, yang qi and the ying qi, you know, you cannot mix." Mm. Then all the old folks, whether it's true or not, you know,
I don't know if I'm being foolish, actually.
Yeah, but it's our loved one. You know what I mean? Like, wow, it's... To think that it's hard. Like when I proposed the bio urn for mom, I think you probably know in the second edition where Susan, and actually we have a picture of her. She's also a Christian. When her son 30 years old died,
you told me. I remember.
So she actually wanted to put in a columbarium niche near her house, and we couldn't find a columbarium niche. And this is Susan. Zoom in. Susan, after 1 month. Then she decided to put her son in the bio urn. And I thought it was very beautiful because she actually prepared a little small couch next to the room that they stay in, because the boy is special needs kid and has been staying with mom, her Susan, for many, many, many years since birth. And then she just put, and when I went and delivered the plant, she has one like cushion chair next to the door, to the entrance to her bedroom. And then it was so nice, and she said, oh, Angelina, you want to put here? And then she had a drawing, like a painting that she wanted to put it up. And I texted her recently because there was an interview that was done by FM 95.8. And I wanted to talk about her because she was mentioned in my book. So, and she's like, yeah, I want you to know that, yeah, I'm okay to share, because there's so many ways to commemorate our loved ones, right? Mm. And then I think sometimes you still talk to him. I mean, it's a good way to let
it, like when the kids do well, or Father's Day just passed.
What do you do? Celebrate.
So I just bought a little cake and we just kind of like remembered him. I had actually wanted to bring them to a building which he won an award for. He's an engineer, ma.
Oh, really?
He's a civil engineer.
Sure.
So he won this award for the subcourts building, the new subcourts building.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This happened after?
Yes, he was awarded the award. No, just before he died. He got the award just before he died.
Okay.
So, I wanted to bring the kids there to actually see the building, ma. Come on, right?
Because
it's like...
Yeah.
But then, they woke up very late and all. Never mind.
But you can always.
I will bring them again
on his birthday.
I'll bring them. Yes, for them to see what Papa did.
Yeah. No, I think this woman is also amazing that she doesn't speak anything ill about your husband.
I won't.
Yeah, she never. And
I won't. So, and I still want to celebrate their father.
Yeah.
For them.
That is beautiful, and I think no matter what happened within, this is what I subscribe to. You know, whatever happened between parents, it stays with the parents.
Yeah.
We don't affect the kids. Kids adore your husband. I remember how they just absolutely adore your husband.
Yeah.
And I think that doesn't snatch away, you know, like being parent is really difficult. And when you drag the kids into something that doesn't work between parents, it's not fair to them. They didn't ask for it, right? And I think that's the beautiful part about Charmaine that I learned from also in 2018 when I talked to you, and never once has she spoken anything about her husband. And every time I said, you got enough money or not? Are you sure you don't ask for more? She's like, it's okay. And I was like, I did the math for her. I really think it's not enough.
She really felt that it wasn't enough. She was like, what? Yeah. Is that all? And I was like, but how much do you need, right? Like,
yeah.
It's okay, but I mean, you know, he's probably having a hard time because he has to rent his own place.
Because
when we separated, he had to rent his own place. And he's a human being too. I mean,
is he?
I mean, no matter what, I think that... I think there are actually a lot of families nowadays, right? Like when families break up, sometimes the parents tend to be very, very toxic and negative, and they speak really badly of the spouse to the kids.
Yeah.
And I have Facebook friends who are always, you know, lamenting about this. And I feel that, for what? Mm. You know, you only live one life.
Absolutely.
Correct or not?
You only live
one life. Why do you have to...
Torture another's life,
if your chapter has ended, then okay, just close it gracefully and just move on.
Exactly.
You don't have to open it and keep like, oh, he's a piece of shit.
Gong, yes, it's really lovely to have this woman. So glad to finally have her, and I think there's so much wisdom from her to share, you know. And
nobody asked me one, you know.
Huh? No, I asked.
Yeah, I think you're the first who asked.
That's why I need to acknowledge this woman. So now y'all will know this woman who's mentioned in the cover.
Got story one.
This is her. Got story.
I have story.
Journey.
I have backstory.
It all began in this room on that table that I've already given to my mom. Yeah, it's sitting in the Ang Yuseng's office.
Mm.
But that's the beautiful.
So you have seen me
it.
From my best to my worst, you know.
That's true. Actually.
My best, the best time of my life.
You did.
To the worst.
Yeah.
And now
you're
to the coming out.
Yeah. It's like, you know,
you
transform
really,
from a
really
cocoon. Speaking of that, I think back then you were very different. I remember.
Oh my God.
Yes, you never wear short sleeve. You always wear long sleeve. I remember. You wear dress. Then you have long hair. I think you slip it off after.
I did.
Yeah. So there you have Wong Charmaine. If you haven't read my book, please read it so that you can also indulge in Charmaine's writing and how she beautifully curated my book, Dying to Meet You. And this has been amazing. Thank you, Charmaine, for joining us. Do you have any words of advice or wisdom to share with our listener?
I think it's just what I said before, which is basically that for everyone, woman or man, you know, don't fear.
Mm.
You know, if there's change, Don't be afraid to change, and don't be afraid to look for change, because ultimately life has a way of being all right, you know, after a while things will be all right, mm-hmm. no matter what. So there's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, some of the change is yourself, you go and find one. Then some of the changes you cannot be helped, like accidental death, illness.
That's true.
You know, it can't be helped.
Yeah.
But
what do you learn?
You just roll with it and you'll be fine.
Yeah. I just want to close this with, I always wonder what my graduation ceremony will be like. And I was like, wow, okay, if today I do this, I mean, it gets me too. Sometimes I also get moments where you see I hide, you know, I'm not always so rosy and, you know, chirpy with wine, but, you know, sometimes it hits me, you know, and I also had time where I just feel like, wow, what if today, you know, things just goes like that. But then I realized, but it's a journey. Then I start to ask, what should I learn? What is this episode supposed to learn? I mean, when my dad passed away, it was so hard. That was the hardest point, right? But again, you know, there was so much things I hold on to. So similarly for you. So that's why, you know, no fear. Know the slogan. When I was younger, I always had that. If you know this, it means that you're about the same age as me.
Yeah, don't scare.
Don't scare.
It's okay, one.
It's okay. It's okay not to be okay, okay? All right. So thank you so much. Brilliant. I love this woman
thank you so much.
I hope that you enjoy your new journey and your new cruise to Tuas.
Yes, correct.
Tuas, yes.
Oh, and please, give me nothing, please, nothing. Smooth.
Yeah, bless you.
Smooth drive.
Yes, and I want to wish you all the best for your new job.
Thank
all right, thank you. And we see you at the next episode of Dying to Meet You.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a certainty.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.